Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Joining me today from New Hampshire is Al Gagne, who's the former Director of Ethics and Compliance of Textron Systems Corporation. Al's a regular presenter at SCCE meetings and one of the two co-presenters for our internal investigations conference earlier this year. Al, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Adam, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
So we're going to be discussing today the topic of how you handle the initial report in the case of an allegation. So let's just drive right in with really what I think is the most fundamental question is, what information do you most need to try and collect from the reporter when the person first reaches out?
Well, initially, what I want to get from the reporter is, in their own words and as descriptive as possible, the concern or the allegation of misconduct that they're making. I want them to provide as much detail as possible as to whether or not they personally witnessed the misconduct. Did they hear it from someone else? Or was it something that they just suspect might be going on? I want to be able to try to determine, to the best of my ability, the credibility of the source. And also, is it the type of misconduct or concern that would require further review and possible investigation down the road?
So basically, what you really want to get is the fundamentals of the who, what, where, when, especially is it versus, what are the facts versus what's the conjecture, correct?
Exactly. I want the person to, describe, like I said, in as much detail and provide as much information. I'm trying to understand, first of all, what is their concern and, how soon did this particular misconduct occur? Was there anyone else besides the reporter who witnessed it? Also, is the reporter someone that makes themselves known to me during the initial report? If the person has the willingness to do that, that lends more credibility to the report, because now I know the source of the report and I have the ability to go back to them very easily to get additional information if I need it as I make the determination whether or not to investigate the concern or the allegations.
Now, typically, as I understand things, the reporter obviously comes forward, they have a concern, they obviously want you to do something, and then some may ask for you to get back to them on this. What should you promise and what shouldn't you promise the reporter?
Okay, what I would promise the reporter is that I will take their report in good faith and that I will review and I will do some do a little bit of analysis, basically looking at maybe some possible, documentary evidence and look for other possible sources to determine further the credibility and also to determine whether or not there's enough information to warrant an investigation, meaning, a deeper dive into the allegations or concerns. One of the things that I would also want to learn from the reporter is there, what are their expectations? And in most cases, the reporter's expectations are that they want the misconduct to stop. They may have a motive that they're not looking to get anyone in trouble. In fact, in many cases, reporters were very reluctant to come to the helpline or to call the report in directly to me, the ethics and compliance officer. One of the things I wouldn't tell them is, for example, I wouldn't tell them if I was definitely going to be conducting investigation because I don't have enough information at that point to make that determination. I would also not tell them that, that I can protect them from retaliation if it were to occur. However, if they were to be retaliated against by other employees or folks in management, that it would be important for them to get back to me immediately so that I could get my arms around that and make sure that person is protected going forward from any, you know, potential retaliation by others in the company. I would also tell them that I would try to protect as much as possible the confidentiality of them as a reporter. I would go on the information that I received, and hopefully the information that they provided would be enough to get more data, evidence, and make a determination as to the extent of an internal investigation.
So, but do you, is it good or bad advice to tell the reporter you're going to keep him or her in the loop as the investigation progresses?
It depends. Typically, I'd like to keep them in the loop, even an anonymous reporter. If a person is unwilling to provide their name, would they be willing to at least give a nickname or a code name? And so I would ask them to call back the helpline in a week or so, just to see if I have any more questions for them or if there's additional information that they might be able to provide. Typically, what happens over the course of an investigation, even when a reporter is anonymous, they somehow end up becoming known to the investigator, either because the reporter, you know, may wish to remain anonymous, but they go back to the workplace and they tell other employees in their work group that they reported to the helpline. So as you're doing the investigation and you might be interviewing people, they'll say, oh, I know who called in the report. You know, it was so-and-so who told us that they called it in. And by the time you get back to that person, then they would eventually admit that, yeah, it was them that called it in. But, you know, but if I know who the person is, one of the things that I can tell them is, please don't tell anyone else that you've reported this. Give me some time. Give me the opportunity to start making a determination whether or not I need to conduct an investigation. And, you know, if at some point they call back and they say, well, are you doing an investigation? I may or may not reveal to them that I am doing that, because I want to try to keep as much control over the investigation as possible without, you know, letting them feel like, you know, they're part of the investigation. I don't want them being a part of the investigation. They reported the misconduct. They did their job. And that's basically what they're supposed to do as an employee.
And that's great counsel. And I think, you know, one of the things that you get into is you got to obviously put the brakes on what the person's expectations are for involvement. What about your brakes? I mean, it must be very easy when somebody's mm-hmm. calling in to immediately for the mind to go racing. Ooh, I'm going to have to check with so-and-so. How do you keep your own sense of sort of next steps under control while you're trying to collect the report and figure things out?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the first things I would do once I made a determination that the report of misconduct was credible, and I would follow up with subject matter experts in the company to get an understanding and some good knowledge as to the policies, procedures, work instructions, whatever may be related to the alleged misconduct. So I would basically start educating myself as to what's at stake. I would also engage certain folks in management, particularly general counsel, maybe human resources, finance, internal audit, to determine from them what resources I might need, and also to let them know that, you know, there will be an investigation forthcoming. And as a result, I want to provide the minimum disruptions to the workplace. So with their support, if they know that there's an investigation going on, if there are employees who then become reluctant to support that investigation, I have management, you know, having my back, and they'll make sure that people do cooperate with the investigation.
Interesting. It's a lot of parallels with the rest of compliance work in terms of needing to make sure that you engage your proper allies and work with them.
Right. Accordingly. And you want to keep that And you want to keep that to a minimum, Adam. You know, you don't want to, you know, necessarily communicate the extent of an investigation to people who don't have a need to know. So really, the key is who has a need to know that the investigation is going on. And, you know, and I've in the past, I've made mistakes where I failed to, notify someone that should have been notified. And, you know, in the long run, it doesn't help you. So you learn from experience. So when in doubt, you know, make that extra effort and, you know, talk to the right people in management who could ultimately have your back during the investigation.
Yeah, and I would imagine there's also the flip side too, is that you don't want to sort of over-inform people, because there's always the chance that nothing happened and you're going to end up hurting someone's reputation wrongly.
Exactly. You know, that's one of the most important aspects of an investigation, is to do no harm. You don't want to do any harm to the reporter. You don't want to do any harm to employees who may have knowledge of the misconduct. You don't want to do any harm to the company by creating a lot of disruption in the workplace and, you know, getting in the way of productivity. And certainly you don't want to do harm to the subject of the investigation, especially if they're innocent. You know, if you find that during the investigation that, you know, that the misconduct that was alleged is proven to be false, you know, you don't want to create any potential problems for that individual, because then that basically comes back and it hurts you and the integrity of the investigation and the ethics and compliance department. So you want to, you know, you want to do it right. You want to do it right.
Yeah. Well, it's a strong argument for prudence, from how you listen at the beginning to who you involve and to how you communicate. Well, Al, thank you so much for sharing those insights with us today. Thank all of you for listening in. I'm Adam Turtletaub for Compliance Perspectives, wishing you a very good day.
Thank you, Adam. Bye.